What was the invitation song?
98.
Thanks, sir.
Yes, sir.
I got confused there. Whoops, putting that on the wrong thing there, I think. This looks like the same group we had earlier. We talked a little bit in 2 Peter this morning in the Bible class, and we're going to be talking about Peter again a little bit here this morning. As I've indicated this morning, it's been a year since I've been in the pulpit, so bear with me. I know you're not supposed to do that. One of the things they teach you in public speaking is never say or apologize before it starts. Plenty of time for apologizing later. And we've talked this morning about that we're going to start worshiping here at this congregation in Pahrump. But we will be also spending some time supporting Mark down there, as we talked about this morning. And another old letter lesson this morning. It takes a look at the narrow versus the wide, which we talked a little bit about this morning. It looks at the diligence required in seeking the truth. We find that in Hebrews 11:6. And it was developed around Colossians 3:1-2. Colossians 3:1-2 is one of my favorite verses, scriptures in the entire Bible. And I built a lot of my sermons around Colossians 3:1-2. And I think it tells the story of where we're at. It gives us a good indication of where we need to go. Colossians 3:1-2, Paul writes to the Colossians, "Therefore, if you have been raised up with Christ," and I believe everybody in this room this morning has been raised with Christ, and that's referring to baptism. It's referring to coming out of the waters of baptism, pure and clean, ready to change your life, ready to become a child of God, and to march in a different way than you had previously. And therefore, if you have been raised with Christ, Paul says, keep seeking the things above where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Seek those things which are above and not those things on the earth. That's very, telling. And we talked a little bit about that this morning. Set your mind on things above, not on things on the earth. And we talked about the fact that we start off being one of those earthly beings. We're the people that come out of the womb to learn to be an earthly being. And yet we've got to learn to be a righteous being. And we can't do that without knowing what it is to be righteous. We can't know that without knowing what it is God requires of us in order to be right with Him. And so I think that's very telling. If you think about that, set your mind on things above, not on things on the earth. Now, how much time do we spend thinking about things on the earth? I mean, you think about it. People working, their job is important to them. We can't live without an automobile anymore. Now, at the time of Jesus, they didn't need automobiles. But we kind of manufacture ourselves into requiring an automobile by putting all these big cities. And people have to live in some other place. And so we have a situation. When June and I went to Germany back in 1969, we lived in Germany. And one of the first things we learned is they didn't have big garbage cans, just little round garbage cans about this high and about this big around. And you know why? The reason they had small garbage cans is because they got their food daily. They didn't store up all the cans. They went to the store and got meat from the meat man. And they went and got their fresh produce and they brought everything home. They didn't have a lot of cans and a lot of waste because everything they got was a daily thing. They didn't go to the supermarket. There were no supermarkets where we lived in Germany. Of course, that was a long time ago. Things probably have changed a little bit now. But nevertheless, I forgot where I was going with this. Anyway, we need to think totally about changing our lives and getting out of that materialistic mode that we're in, that we have created. like I was talking about needing a car. We have to have a car. It's almost impossible to live in the United States and not have a vehicle of some sort. Even the public transportation will not suffice. And even if it did, it would take you forever to get where you're going and return in public transportation. It would be, I don't know that you could do all that. Think about, you know, a lot of times, many of us in here need medical attention from time to time. And a lot of it has to be down the hill, actually over the hill, in Vegas. How do we get there? You know, if we don't have a car, we don't have, our society is built around having automobiles. You know, but automobiles are very important to us. Our homes are very important to us. Those are materialistic things. God doesn't worry about your home. He doesn't worry about your automobile. He worries about your soul, you. We have a lot of things to worry about. We've got to have a job in order to survive. And we spend a lot of time dealing with that job, dealing with our income, dealing with the life that we have on this earth, not thinking about the life to come. And God is trying to teach us. In fact, when he brought the people out of the children of God in their first occupation, or when they were first in captivity in Egypt, Moses went in to bring them out of captivity. 400 years of captivity there. Bring them out across the Red Sea into wandering in the wilderness for 40 years. Of course, that was their fault that they had to wander in the wilderness. But nevertheless, God was taking them in the wilderness to teach them a lesson, teach them to rely on God. We need to rely on God. And you know, you can't do that if you're a materialistic person. If you're worried about your job, if you're worried about your income, if you're worried about food on the table. God says, I'll take care of it. But you know, it's hard to say, yeah, okay, God, take care of it. I'm going to dedicate myself to being what you want me to be and let you take care of it. I can't do that. I don't think any of us can. There's just too many things that we have to do. And that consumes our time and consumes our energy and consumes us. And we find out that we spend a lot of time being a materialistic person in this materialistic world that's ruled by the devil, by Satan. And we find ourselves in that situation. And so it's difficult. It behooves us to spend as much time as we can together, learning and teaching and working to edify one another, which means build us up. Help us to be strong in that path that we're walking, or we want to walk. So Colossians 3:1-2 says, set your mind on things above. Colossians 3:2 says, set your mind on things above, not on things on the earth. And so this morning, I want to look at a situation. We're going to start in Matthew chapter 16, starting in verse 13. If you get there, Matthew chapter 16, verse 13, we're going to read through verse 17. Matthew writes here, now when Jesus, and talking about Jesus, came into the district of Caesarea Philippi. He was asking his disciples, who do people say that the Son of Man is? Now, Caesarea Philippi is up north. And we're sitting in a situation right now where Jesus is just about ready. He's up north with his disciples, and he's going to head south because he knows he's got a place he's got to be for Passover. And we know that there's a place he's got to be for Passover. It's on the cross. And he knows he's got to go get on the cross. He knows all this is going to happen to him, and he's heading back. In fact, there's indication that he was out leading the pack. He was in a hurry to get back to do what had to be done, head back for Jerusalem. They're up there in Caesarea Philippi getting ready to head back for the week, what they call the Passion Week, the week before that Jesus spends there in Jerusalem, going back and forth between Bethany and Jerusalem, the week before he was crucified. And he asks this question. He says, who do people say that the Son of Man is? And they said, some say John the Baptist, and others say Elijah, but still others say Jeremiah, or one of the prophets. And he said to them, but who do you say that I am? And Simon Peter, in his exuberance, answered, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." You are the Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus said to him, "Blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jonah, because flesh and blood did not reveal this to you, but my Father who is in heaven." You know, I think it doesn't say this here, but I'm kind of thinking Jesus is saying to Peter, "That's the right answer, Peter." But you're looking at it from the wrong perspective. Because Peter and about half of the whole Jewish population, in fact, not all of the whole Jewish population, were expecting an earthly king. They expected Jesus to be coming back. Jesus was going to be a king. And we're going to see that in a little bit. We're going to look at the fact that they're going to celebrate him coming in on a donkey, throwing palm leaves and flowers. And that's the kind of thing that they did for kings, conquering kings who were returning home. They're looking at Jesus as a conquering king returning home. He's going to relieve us of the pressure of living under the Romans. We're going to be free. We're going to do it again. Well, what's really funny about that is during the 400 years between the Testaments, during the Apocrypha, during the time between the Old Testament and the New Testament, they were occupied by about four different nations, and one of them was them during that period of time. And you know, they did a worse job of controlling themselves than did some of those other people that were controlling them. I think Persia was involved, Syrians were involved, Egypt probably had them for a little while. And yet, they did a worse job of governing themselves than did these conquering nations did at that time. But nevertheless, they had just spent a lot of time being under the control of corrupt folks. And they wanted out from that pressure. Right now, it was the Romans. Peter answers that Christ is the Son of the living God was right, but see here, that Peter believed that Jesus was the Son of God. In that he was right. And then Jesus answered Peter and he said, "Blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jonah, for flesh and blood have not revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven. And I also say to you that you are Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades shall not prevail against it." Now, we're all familiar with that. He's talking about building his church on a solid foundation. The foundation that Jesus is the Son of God and he's going to be head of the kingdom. You see, Peter had the right answer, but his reasoning was wrong because he was thinking like everybody else. They were expecting an earthly kingdom. And we see that again. I talked about the fact that they welcomed him in. They welcomed Jesus in with palm branches like he was a king. Now, he was going to be the king. It says in verse 8 of Mark. Mark chapter 11, verses 1 through 10. We're looking at verse 8. It says, "Many spread their clothes on the road. Others cut down leafy branches from the trees and spread them on the road. And those who went before and those who followed cried out, saying, Hosanna! Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Blessed is the kingdom of our father David that comes in the name of the Lord. Hosanna in the highest." You see, history tells us that the way the Hebrews welcomed, this is the way the Hebrews welcomed a returning king. They were saluting an earthly king that would remove them from tyranny. So Peter believed that Jesus was the Son of God, but he also believed, as many did, that the expected kingdom was an earthly kingdom and not a spiritual kingdom. But we see what Jesus' response to that is. He says, from that time, and we're looking in Matthew chapter 16. Jesus began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem. Why? Because they didn't realize that. They thought he was coming in to be a conquering king. He must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things from the elders and the chief priests and the scribes and be killed and raised on that third day. Verse 22, "Then Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him." We're talking about Jesus. Peter took Jesus aside, saying, "Far be it from you, Lord. This shall not happen to you." But he turned and said to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan. You are an offense to me, for you are not mindful of the things of God, but the things of men." Get behind me, Satan. You see, Peter was not following Jesus. And that's exactly where we need to be in our lives, following Jesus. Doing, knowing what it is that we have to do, and doing that which needs to be done. That's not what Peter was doing, because he was thinking of an earthly kingdom. And so in that regard, you can't die, Jesus. That would ruin everything. We even see that on the road to Emmaus. Remember when after he was raised from the dead, before his ascension, he walked among the people on the road to Emmaus. He encountered two disciples. You remember that story? Luke chapter 24, I think it is. And during that period of time, on that walk to Emmaus, Jesus taught them. But they were sad. They were unhappy. Why? Because we just lost our king. Everything is gone. We're nothing. Because our king is dead. All the things that we hoped for were no longer available. It's all gone. And that's after he'd already been crucified. They still had that feeling that it was supposed to be an earthly kingdom. And you see, Peter was not following. Peter was leading. And that's one of the problems that we have as individuals within this world, is the fact that we think we know what's best for us. And a lot of times we think we know the path that we need to take. And if it's contrary to what Jesus said, as we can indicate by some of the congregations around here, we're going to do it our way and not God's way. Now, we may not change things, but we may ignore certain things. We will modify certain things. We'll look at it from a different perspective. We'll look at it from our point of view. You see, Peter was exactly of that ilk. And that's exactly where people, God's people, are at most of the time. They're thinking that they have the right answers. And it's really hard to put God's answers before our answers. In every single case, Peter was leading, not following. He thought he knew what needed to be done. Peter exhibits the weakness of man since the beginning and continues to this day. You see, from the beginning, they thought they knew what was best, the best path for them. Adam and Eve thought they knew what the best path was. God said, "Don't eat." They ate. The spies that were sent to Canaan, we just talked about them going into the wilderness. Why did they go into the wilderness? Because they sent the spies to spy out the new land, the promised land that Moses was leading them to. One man from each tribe, set up to look at the promised land. They came back. And out of that 12, only two would fall on with God. Joshua and Caleb, is that what it's called. Two of them would come back and said, "Yeah, we can do this." The other 10 says, "Oh no, they got giants there, we can't do this." There's no faith in their response. They weren't following God. They were looking at the things from their perspective. We find that, by the way, in Numbers chapter 13. After entering the promised land, the Hebrews thought that they had the answer. You remember, before entering the promised land, we look at that in Judges 2:2. Again, this is after Joshua. So this is after they made the mistakes in Joshua. And normally when we look at Joshua, we look at that as a successful event because they went into the promised land. They did conquer the promised land. If you look at it from that perspective, there was some success. But if you look at it from the directions that they were given in the Old Testament, in the first five books, or I know it was in Deuteronomy and there was another one. I'm not sure if it was Leviticus or Numbers. Where God explained to them what they needed to do. Exactly what they needed to do when they went in the promised land. And you need to keep in mind one thing. God says, "I'm going to give you this land from Egypt all the way to the Euphrates River. This is your land. This is the promised land I'm giving to you. And here's what you need to do. And did they do that? No, because they did it their way. They did it their way. In Judges 2, verse 2, it tells us what they were supposed to do. You shall make no covenant with the inhabitants in this land. And we see they did that. Every one of them did that. You shall tear down their altars. In some cases they did, some cases they didn't. But you have not obeyed my voice, God says. Why have you done this? Why have you done this? Because they were looking at it from their perspective. They walked into a situation and they decided how it was going to be taken care of. They did it their way. Does that sound like us? God had given them the land from Egypt to the Euphrates. They would not occupy all of that land until the time of Solomon, the third king, after Judges. And then we had King Saul, and then we had King David, and then we had Solomon, David's son. At that time, the empire stretched all the way during the time of Solomon from Egypt to the Euphrates River. See how long it took them to get there? They were supposed to do that when they first entered the promised land. We also think about that first king, King Saul. He thought he knew what he was doing. Remember the story about Saul? He was given instructions to go and attack Amalek and utterly destroy all that they have and do not spare them, but kill both man and women, infant and nursing child, ox and sheep, camel and donkey. Destroy it all. But King Saul knew better. He attacked them, but he took the king hostage. And he took some of the oxen and the lambs, and he brought them back. And we read this whole thing in 1 Samuel 15, chapter 15 through verses 7 through 14. It talks about this. And King Saul comes back and says, "See, look what I did. I've done it exactly as God said to me." And Samuel said to him, "What is that bleeding I hear? What's that mooing I hear? You were supposed to kill all the animals." And then Saul made it even worse by saying, "Well, we bring those back to sacrifice to you." God had told him to kill everything. And they brought it back. Excuses that justify disobedience. Half-truths in an effort to support that disobedience. And as a result of this, King Saul was removed from king. And David was put in his place. 1 Samuel 15:26. Now see, Saul was the first king of the Hebrews, but the last king of Judah was Zedekiah. Now there's a lot of story in there, and we look at all the kings, first and second kings. We had the divided kingdom, we had Israel in the north, the northern kingdom, we had Judah in the south, southern kingdom, and they all, the northern Israel went into captivity first, Assyrian captivity. About 120 years later, Judah went into captivity, Babylonian captivity, for 70 years. During that period of time, there were several kings. And the last king during that divided kingdom was Zedekiah. At that point, one of the things we need to remember is that God told Zedekiah to give yourself up. You need to put yourself, these people are going to come in and take you. You just need to surrender. Give all their hands. But Zedekiah knew better. Zedekiah thought he knew better. And what happened to Zedekiah?
Jeremiah said, "If you surely surrender to the king of Babylon, princes, then your soul shall live. The city shall not be burned, which it was, and you and your house shall live." You see, he told him to surrender. And we see in Jeremiah chapter 39, starting in verse 6, "Then the king of Babylon killed the son of Zedekiah before his eyes in Riblah. The king of Babylon also killed all the nobles of Judah. Moreover, he put out Zedekiah's eyes and bound him with bronze fetters to carry him off to Babylon. And the Chaldeans burned that king's house and the houses of the people with fire and broke down the walls of Jerusalem." You see, Zedekiah thought he knew what was best. God said, "Don't." And he said, "I'm going to do it anyway." And then we come to a prophet, Jonah. You remember Jonah? Jonah thought he knew what was best to do, didn't he? God says, go to Nineveh. From where Jonah was, Nineveh was northeast. He goes down and gets on a boat and heads northwest, towards Tarshish. I'm not going to do that. Jonah says, I know better. God told Jonah to go to the Assyrians, and history notes that the Assyrians were not nice people. They were pretty bad people. They were kind of the nastiest people ever during that period of time. And that probably, in a way, in our minds anyway, maybe justified Jonah and said, I'm not going over there to those people. They don't deserve it. We see that the Pharisees and the Sadducees, they knew it. They thought they knew it. And as a result of that, they refused to believe Jesus, even when the truth was right there. And we'll look at that. Well, I don't think we will look at that. We're not going to have time. I was going to look at another little area this morning. We're probably not going to have time for that. But we know the Pharisees and the Sadducees thought that they knew what was going on, and they didn't know what was going on. They ended up crucifying Jesus. We were talking about Saul of Tarsus this morning. Paul thought he knew what he was doing until the road to Damascus, and he found out that was not the way to go. And Peter didn't know. Remember the story about Peter? He had that dream. God told him to go talk to Cornelius. And he wasn't going to do that. And he had got this dream that he caught all these animals up. God said, eat. And he said, I'm not going to do that. He had a lesson. That's in Acts chapter 10, verses 9 through 16. Well, when I go through that this morning, I was going to look at that, but we're running out of time already. And Peter didn't understand when Jesus said to him earlier, get behind me, Satan. Get behind me, Satan. But Peter also had some more problems. He denied Jesus. For some reason, we feel that we know what's best for us, just as the examples that we cited this morning. Because of our ability to fear, to hear, our ability to feel and touch and see and smell, we lose sight of heaven in the fog of the earthly world that we spend our waking hours in. And we talked about that. I love Deuteronomy chapter 8. I quote it quite often. I'm going to read a little bit of it here because I think it applies. There's an application here to each and every one of us. Deuteronomy chapter 8, starting in verse 10. We also see a little bit of it in Deuteronomy chapter 6. That he talks a little bit about this. But Moses writes here, when you have eaten and are full, then you shall bless the Lord your God for the good land which he has given you. But beware that you do not forget the Lord your God by not keeping his commandments, not keeping his judgments, not keeping his statutes, which I command you today. Lest, when you have eaten and are full, and when you have built beautiful homes and you dwell in them, and when your herds and your flocks multiply, and your silver and your gold multiplies, and all that you have is multiplied, when your heart is lifted up and you forget the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage, and then drop down, verse 17. It says, when you say in your heart, my power and the might of my hand have gained me this wealth. Often in the mind of men from the time of Adam, we come to believe that my power and the might of my hand leads me to believe that it's all right to change the pattern established by God and to create a pattern that seems right to me, a pattern that seems comfortable to me, a pattern that seems to make more sense to me than what God has said. And we justify it by telling ourselves, I do this in the light of the fact that I have not lost sight of God. I've still got my eyes on him.
I have not lost sight of why and why Jesus came. I have not lost sight of realizing the importance of the grace that God has extended to those who are His. And I do this because my goal is heaven. But in the exercise of achieving that goal, people often lose sight of the path, the pattern that is required for each of us to achieve that goal. We can become people with honor with God, our lips. We honor God with our lips, it says, while our hearts follow the wrong path, Mark 7:6-8. And in Mark, he's quoting Isaiah 29. Well did Isaiah prophesy, you hypocrites, as it is written, these people honor me with their lips, but their heart is far from me, and in vain worship me, teaching as the doctrines the commandments of men. For laying aside the commandment of God, you hold with the tradition of men. Those things that are comfortable to us, make sense to us. Jeremiah says, you have planted them, yes. They have taken root, they grow, yes. They bear fruit. You are near in their mouth, but their mind is not with you. Jeremiah 12:2. You know, this is a section we're not going to go to. I was going to talk about willful blindness. You know that? Basically what we've got, willful blindness. We see that in John chapter 9. In fact, in John chapter 9, I built a sermon that's called Willful Blindness, based on just that John chapter 9. Maybe one of these days we'll go through that and have an opportunity to do so maybe. But willful blindness, truth is right there in front of us, but we refuse to see it. We refuse to do it. We refuse to accept the fact that sometimes we don't agree with God. And I find that in a situation oftentimes when I'm going through Scripture. There are certain parts of things that God says to me that I don't like. I don't agree with. But you know, God never asked me, Jack, was it okay? You like that? Jack, do you think we ought to do this? You know what he says? He says, Jack, we're going to do this. This is the way it's going to be. So accept it and do it. Doesn't mean I have to like it. It means I have to do it. Doesn't mean I have to agree with it. It means I have to do it. And if I don't agree with it and I don't like it, the first thing I'm not going to do is change it or ignore it, because that's going to lead me right down a path that takes me over here to a different congregation that does things like the tradition of men and not the traditions of God. And that's something we have to fight. We talked about the fact this morning that we are all sinners and fall short of the glory of God. We've got problems. But we need to keep in mind that whether we agree with God or not, whether we like it or not, we need to be obedient to God. And that's all God asks of us. He didn't ask any of us if we liked it. He didn't ask if you agreed with it. He asks that you be obedient to it. And oftentimes it's difficult to be obedient to the things that God has asked us to do, because it doesn't feel right. It doesn't sit well. It certainly doesn't sit well with society. Or it doesn't sit well with my neighbors or my boss. There's a problem. I remember when I was working. You know, I never changed a bunch of minds when I was working. But they all knew I was religious. They all knew I was a Christian. And I didn't make any one of them, that as far as I know, a Christian. But what I did do is when I walked into a conference room, the language cleaned up immediately. When I walked into a conference room, the discussions that were going on changed immediately. Now, I didn't make any one of those that I knew of Christians. In fact, I tried to convince my best friend to be a Christian, and he died in his sins. Didn't work. He said, Jack, I don't want to talk about that. I don't want to talk about that. I never convinced anybody, I don't think, in my work effort to be a Christian. But I did change the way they acted when I was around. That's something. And maybe it had an effect. Because each one of us is seen by other people. We are all monitored at different times in our lives. Because especially if they know you're a Christian, they're going to be watching you, thinking about you. You are an example. We are an example. And we may not know we're being monitored. We may not know we're being watched, but we are. And we can have an influence on a lot of other people. And if we're not doing the right thing, we can inadvertently be leading people down the wrong path, the wrong way. Jesus said, "Get behind me, Satan." What he's saying is, follow me, Peter. Don't be trying to lead me, Peter. Learn what it is that I'm doing, what I'm teaching you, and be behind me. Support me. Become a child of God. Follow, not lead. And unfortunately, as human beings, we want to lead. We think we have the answers. And when you're doing it wrong, within our perspective, we want to challenge that. Instead of following God, even though we don't agree with Him, following, even though we don't feel comfortable with it, if He says to do it, we need to do it. We need to make that a part of our lives. And we don't have to be necessarily agree with it. But you need to do it. You need to make that a part of our lives. So we need to be followers, not leaders. Leading in the fact that we're leading people in the right direction. By being a follower of God, we can be a leader of man. In that respect, we want to be a leader. But we need to first be followers of God. And we can only do that by knowing exactly what it is that God has planned for us and what He wants for us to do as each individual. And each one of us has a plan. God's got something for each one of us. And each one of us is different. So we need to be followers. If any of you have a need or desire this morning that needs to be filled, I think most of us here are Christians. Most of us here understand exactly what it is we need to do. And most of the things we need to do, we can do right from our seats. If you need to do that, we don't need to make it, unless it's a public statement that needs to be said. And even that can be handled from the seats. But we need to make those decisions. If we have those desires and those needs with God, we need to make them known.
We should pray for each other, for all the members of the church and everything.
There you go.
We have to pray for each other.
So if we have a need, please feel free to make that known as together we stand.